Okay, first of all, thank you very much for inviting me to this program, to inviting me to give this talk. I hope you can hear me. Can you hear me?
Yeah?
Okay. So I will speak about topological robotics, and in particular about planar linkages. So a few general words about topological robotics. Topological robotics has two major directions. One is studying new manifolds suggested by robotics, and this actually, my talk today belongs to this first direction. And B is studying topological problems which are motivated by robotics applications. Actually, there are numerous problems, interesting topological problems. I just want to emphasize that when we speak about topological robotics, we mainly intend to prove theorems. It's mainly mathematics, also it may have some applications and algorithms, but at this stage it is mainly pure mathematical. Well, just a few words about robotics in general. The goal of robotics is to create autonomous robots, which will accept high-level descriptions of tasks and will execute them without further human intervention. The input description specifies what should be done, and the robot decides how to do and perform the task. Well, examples of tasks are clean my room, drive me home, bring me my dinner, and all these tasks are very simple for human beings, but are very difficult and very different for robots, because for each of these tasks you have to create specific algorithms and specific artificial intelligence problems. Well, it's also a task could be let's play football, and this is a really highly complicated task for robots because it requires collective behavior, and will teach me maths. It's not very difficult, and can we talk? Topology. How topology enters robotics? Topology enters robotics through the notion of configuration space. Every mechanical system has its own configuration space, variety of its states. Well, this notion appears to be trivial for mathematicians, but in fact it is it's not trivial and even controversial in and community of robotics people, because if you have a system of large complexity which cannot be described fully, you cannot assume that you know configuration space of the system, so you can only say that it's a probabilistic measure of knowledge of this configuration space. So, well, this question actually may touch somehow non-commutative geometry or methods of non-commutative geometry, and I will discuss them at the end of my talk. Well, examples of configuration spaces, the simplest one is robot arm. So here we have several bars connected by revolving joints. Configuration space in the planar case is a product of circles, and if it is in a three-dimensional space, then it is a product of two-dimensional spheres. So here we allow self-intersections of the robot arm. Otherwise, the configuration space will be subset of torus or product of spheres where there are no self-intersections. Well, this is called the usual configuration space in topology when you study varieties of points with conditions that there are no collisions between different points. In robotics, people study these configuration spaces when this space Y is a graph, and this was initiated by Greist and Kodicek, and it has industrial applications when you move, when you control motion of some objects moving along some railway tracks in a factory floor or something like that. Another thing, before I start my topic, I want to mention this universality theorems for configuration spaces. There are several theorems of this type, and one of them, proven by Kapovich and Milson, says that any smooth compact manifold, there exists a generalized linkage. I will say a few words, what does it mean? Whose modular space is diffeomorphic to a disjoint union of a number of copies of M. So, sorry? Modular space means that first you start with a graph. You start with a graph and you put some labels, numbers on edges. So each graph has lengths. And you study modular space means that you... Metric graph, yes. And then you study different ways of embedding this graph onto the plane. So vertices go in some points such that if they are connected by an edge, the distance is exactly this number. The variety of embeddings of the realization space. Okay, so this is essentially the modular space. In fact, it is slightly more complicated than that because there are some vertices which are fixed. We will. I don't want to go into this. This is just illustration, showing that, well, these configuration spaces of very simple mechanisms are universal in the sense that any manifold can be realized like that.
What's the moduli space of a graph?
Well, this is I just explained.
Is there a short answer, just how to get from a...
Well, you start with a graph, let's say you have a graph with, for example, like this. Well, this graph, actually, I will study later. And suppose every edge has a number, metric graph, which means the distance, length of this edge. And you consider all possible placements of this graph into the plane. For example, I can... things here, the angle you can change, and well, it's a variety, it's a manifold. I will study this later. But here, graph is understood in a more general way. So graph can be something like that, arbitrary graph, with this numbers. So now I start my topic of my talk, which I will discuss in detail. And these are also graphs and also modular spaces of graphs. But these graphs are very simple. These are kind of circular graphs. I look at closed chain of with some numbers. Let's see. Right. And possible placements of this chain on the plane. Okay, you can view this as a planar polygon. So up to global rotation of the plane. So if you can, one of the vertices can be assumed to be fixed forever. And this also, one edge can be fixed forever. So we can think of one specific edge being completely fixed, and then it is this mechanism which is called linkage, which is appears on this picture, and all possible states of this mechanism is this variety which I want to study. So another point of view, if we can use this variety as variety of all planar n-gons, self-intersections are allowed, up to plane isometries. Formal definition is the following. Formal definition is the following. So this L is fixed length vector. So this are lengths of. So I don't consider this more general type of graphs. I consider only this kind of graphs. And I fix this n. N is the number of sides of this polygon. And I fix length vector, so these are positive real numbers. And then variety of this ML is defined as variety of all n tuples of unit vectors, such that the sum is zero. This means that it closes up to become a closed curve up to a global action of, or diagonal action of SO2. And the second description, which is equivalent, one of the sides can be assumed to be to have unit direction of E1. This is the same. Well, this varieties were studied by Thurston and other people, Wicks, Walker, Kretschko, Hausmann. They are very nice varieties. I mean, if you... Well, these are completely general by universality theorems. And these are very special, as we shall see. Just to create a feeling of what is going on, let's consider a few examples. So suppose n equals 4, so I consider n quadrangles. So I have one side is 3, the other side is 2, 1, and 1. So maybe I'll do it here. So we have 2 points. So this is my fixed side of length 1, but here I have two bars, one of length 3 and another of length 2. Let's put it. See, another of length 2. And now the positions of these two must be such that this distance equals 1, right? So first I ignore this condition, and I look at all possible placements of this point. And I see that this variety is this ring with center at this point. It is a ring with internal radius 1 and external radius 5. External radius 5. So this is where this point can be. And for each position of this point, actually we have two possible positions of this edges, which are symmetric, except when this point is on the boundary. Here they are just like this, so symmetry will be identical. And also, if this point is here, then they are also folded up, collinear configuration. So a possible placements of this point form this ring. Each point inside the ring is kind of covered twice, and each point on the boundary is covered once. Now, this point, now we look at this remaining condition. Remaining condition says that the distance between this point and this point must be 1. So this means that if we draw circle of radius 1, we center at this point, which is shown here, this circle, this small circle, then this point must lie on this arc. So each point inside of this arc is represented twice, but boundary points are represented once. So we have to glue them together, and we see that here it is the circle. In this special case, variety is a circle. Now, if you take different numbers, well, then this ring becomes different, the smaller ring becomes different. In this case, well, just applying the same method, you see that you have two copies of the sphere, because the whole sphere lies inside the ring, so every point is represented twice. More examples. I will not analyze these examples, but we'll just want to tell you, if you take length vector to be 2, 2, 1, 1, then configuration space is the following graph. It has two singular points. And if you take a most symmetric case, 1, 1, 1, 1, the linkage consisting of all equal sides, which is called equilateral linkage, then the configuration space has three singular points and is this kind of graph. Okay. Okay, so okay, now I mean, this was an example with n equals 4, and we want to study for general n and understand general structure of this kind of spaces which appear. So we call this vector generic if the sum, well, if you put here epsilon I equals plus or minus 1 and multiply it to the length, it is non-zero. So geometrically, this means that you cannot put all your linkage into one line. I mean, if you take epsilon equals 1, this means that this goes in one direction. And minus 1, it goes in the opposite direction. So this condition, if the sum equals 1, means that you can put your, arrange your linkage so that it, well, it closes up. I mean, well, I intentionally draw them parallel, also they are on the same line. Right? So this is called collinear configuration. So this condition, vector L, is called generic if there are no collinear configurations with this set of lengths.
So it's perfectly all right to have some rods collinear as long as they're not all collinear.
Yes, yes. Some bars can be parallel. But if not all bars are parallel. For example, if you take, let's say, well, if you go back to this, see, this is not generic because, well, 2 plus 1 equals this 2 plus this 1. This is also not generic, clearly. But, well, this is generic. Well, it's easy to see. Well, because, for example, the total sum is 13, which is odd number. It's not divisible by 2, so it's not... Okay, so this is generic. And these two are non-generic. And there is a theorem, general theorem, saying that if L is generic, then this manifold is a smooth closed manifold of dimension n minus 3.
Was your first example generic? The one that just gave you the circle, the one before that?
Yes, this was
generic. Is that generic?
This is generic, yes.
So here it looks, because of those boundary points, it looks,
yes,
it's not,
yes,
smooth,
no, no, but
you're saying it can be given a smooth structure.
Well, it is. I mean, it is. It just mapped onto the plane as, well, in this way. But it is, as, sorry. You see, my definition is here. See this definition. So it is a submanifold of a torus. And as submanifold torus, it is a smooth submanifold. So this is quite actually easy theorem. Known, it's not my theorem. This is also two known theorems. One may ask when it is disconnected. Sorry, this this is incorrect what I said. This slide is not correct, sorry. I want to correct this slide. This says, when M is not empty. This theorem should say, when M is not empty. Or otherwise, when M is empty. So the answer is, M is empty if and only if there is one side, which is so long that the other sides cannot match it. So this is exactly what it should say. Apologize for this. This theorem says when M is disconnected. Actually, this is correct now. Disconnected. And it says, it is a true theorem, but, there is another theorem which I wanted to mention. How to raise?
Down there.
Okay, so maybe let's look at example the simplest example is when n equals 3 and you have triangle. So in this case, ML is just 2 points. Because, well, it's rigid, you cannot move triangle. Just 2 points. Another example, if suppose you have some linkage, doesn't matter what it is, and then you add here several very small sides. So you have vector L consisting of certain numbers, and then you put epsilon, epsilon, doesn't matter how many epsilons you add. So the number of bars increases. But what happens with the topology of this? So so if my L0 was just initial, L bar is just initial vector, then ML equals ML bar times S1 times S1 times S1. So as many epsilons, well, it's K times, so this is K times. So this is a kind of stabilization. You can always add very little sides. And effect of that on the configuration space will be addition of circle or multiplication by circles. Because, well, here you can rotate arbitrarily this, each side. You can rotate arbitrarily. So, for example, I'll call this operation suspension. So suspension topologically reduces to multiplying the space to a bunch of circles. So, for example, I can start from here. So here I had S0, triangle, and take suspension. I will get, several circles here. And this is exactly the theorem, the case of the theorem. You see, in this case, configuration space is still disconnected because it kind of it has triangle there, and triangle cannot be flipped continuously. So it is actually union, disjoint union of two copies of those. So the theorem of Kapovich and Milson says that if it is disconnected, then it is exactly this. Then it is disjoint union of two copies of the torus. So the problem which I will consider in this talk is about finding the Betti numbers of this ML as functions of L, as functions of the length vector. We have seen in all these examples that topology essentially depends on this length. So we want to find the Betti numbers as functions of this length vector. And similar problem for R3, when you consider linkages in R3, was solved by Klechko, and this is his answer. This is Poincaré polynomial of the spaces, polygon spaces, and S here denotes the set of all short subsets, which I will describe on this next slide. This is important. So we consider, well, this is a set of indices of our sides of our polygon. We consider subsets of this set, essentially sets of edges, and we call it short if the total length of this set is less than the length of the remaining part of the linkage. We call it long if it is longer than the length of the remaining part of the linkage. And we call it median if it is just exactly half of the total size. So this median subsets exist only for degenerate length vectors. And this is our main result. And this is a joint result with Dirk Schütz. This is our theorem, which gives a full answer for the Betti numbers. You have a question?
Yeah.
So let me read it. Fix a link of the maximal length, Ly. So we'll just longest link. And then for any k, we denote by ak and by bk the number of short and medium subsets of this the set of indices having cardinality k plus 1, which contain the longest link. Well, we'll have an example in a minute. So we fix longest link, and then we consider all short subsets containing the longest link, and all medium subsets containing the longest link. And we consider such sets having cardinality k plus 1. The number of such subsets is denoted by ak and by bk. And then the homology group of this variety, of this manifold, in fact, I should say variety because it's not always a manifold, as we have seen. So here I don't assume that L is generic. This is general. The rank of this group equals AK plus BK plus AN minus V minus K. Right? So now just rephrasing, if we look at the Poincaré polynomial, we can write it in this way, where QT is a kind of generating function of this AK, numbers of short subsets, and RT is a generating function of the median subsets. For example, if I take, let's say, n equals 5, and this is my length vector. So I fix a link of maximal length, which is 3. And then I consider short subsets containing this this 3. Well, the total length is it is 9. So, well, 3 is short, and then 3 plus 1 is short, and 3 plus 1 is short. So I have, well, one subset of cardinality 1 and two subsets of cardinality 2. And that's it, short. Okay? So if you just do this calculation with a Poincaré polynomial, one obtains this, and this means that it is surface two-dimensional manifold of genus 2.
With your study here, the surgery that happens when you
cross more or less, yes. Yeah. But it is in a different, in a slightly different way, but essentially, yes. Surgery happens when you change this vector and cross the wall and go into, yes, that's right.
You can describe what kind of surgery?
Well, yes, I mean, but we don't do it in this way, but it is essentially, yeah, equivalent to that. Well, maybe I'll just skip this slide and go further. Well, this slide was intended to show you that if we have, this shows that if applying the theorem, you can see that if this manifold ML has two connected components, then it has a Poincaré polynomial this, which is the same as Poincaré polynomial of this Q-tori, which is, just confirming the previous theorem. I want to skip this slide. Now I want to just sketch a method of the proof. And I think this is our method is also interesting and maybe even more interesting than the theorem itself because it is quite general and very effective. So it is a general theory of how Morse theory works in the presence of involutions. So suppose we have a smooth manifold, well, maybe it is boundary, and suppose that we have a Morse function on this and an involution, so we have two objects, and they are kind of compatible, first in some sense, I mean, in the sense that the function is invariant under this involution, and the critical points of this function coincide with the fixed points of the involution. Well, in this condition, let's just ignore it. It is just, if the boundary is empty, there is no condition. Well, just, let's just, for the sake of this talk, it's not essential. Then the statement is that each homology group is free or bigger of rank equal the number of critical points of A, of F, having Morse index I, which means that we have perfect Morse function. I mean, Morse inequalities are satisfied as equalities. And moreover, this involution acts on homology groups as multiplication by minus 1 to power I. So let me show you a picture here. So this is in R3, we have surface around this z-axis, symmetric with respect to z-axis, and involution is a symmetry with respect to z-axis, Morse function is height. Height usually, as usual in Morse theory, just height, z-coordinate. So here we see exactly that this happens, that the fixed points of this involution are intersection points of this surface with z-axis, and they are exactly the critical points of the height function. So this theorem applies and gives perfectness that homology groups are free abelian, rank equal the number of critical points of given index. Well, I just want to explain how the proof is quite simple, actually. I want to explain ideas of this proof. So we choose a Riemannian metric, which is invariant with respect to the involution. You may start with arbitrary metric and then symmetrize. If you have a critical point, then it is fixed under this involution, and we have differential of this involution. We claim that this differential of this involution acts exactly like minus 1. It's just quite easy to see. Now we look at the Morse-Snail complex constructed out of this function. So it has basis, these critical points as free basis of this, and it has differential. And differential is given by this formula. It involves some incidence coefficients between critical point of index, say, I, and critical points of index I minus 1. Essentially, what we claim is that this, all these coefficients are trivial, are zero, under our assumptions. Why? Well, in general, this coefficient equals sum of contributions, the signs, plus minus 1, out of every trajectory which goes from which, so we have critical points of a point of index I, and here critical points of index I minus 1. So we take arbitrary trajectory of gradient flow going from P to Q, and a sign, there is a sign plus or minus 1, and this incidence coefficient equals the sum of all the signs. Well, I mean, as trajectories actually asymptotically go to this point, I mean, this, everything is asymptotic. But in our situation, when we have involution, for every trajectory, there is a symmetric trajectory, trajectory which is obtained by applying involution to this gamma. And we show that the signs given by the, any trajectory and its kind of symmetric image together sum up to zero. So they are opposite signs. So this means that the total coefficient, incidence coefficient vanishes, and so differential of this Morse chain complex is trivial, and well, this proves the theorem. Well, there is another theorem which we also use, which is slightly stronger. It has stronger assumptions and has stronger conclusions. It actually gives not only the rank of the Betti numbers, but also gives generators of Betti numbers. It says, suppose we have a smooth compact manifold with boundary, and suppose M is equipped with a Morse function and with a smooth involution, satisfying the properties of the previous theorem. So meaning that the function is invariant with respect to the involution, and the critical points of the function are exactly the fixed points of the involution. Assume that for any critical point of this function, we are given a smooth, close, connected submanifold. For any critical point, this is our manifold M, we have a smooth connected submanifold XP, which contains this point, which is tau invariant, contains this point, and this point actually is the maximum point of this function. So the maximum point of this function. And for any fixed point of XP, the Morse indices of F and of F restricted to XP coincide. Then all these submanifolds are orientable, and the set of homology classes realized by this set of submanifolds forms a free basis of the homology group. So, I mean, under these assumptions, I should have skipped the details, but under this assumption, you just get exact basis realized by submanifolds. And this is what happens in our situation. Well, now I will explain how the previous theorems about involutions and Morse functions apply to the situation with this robot arm and with this linkage. So we can consider a robot arm distance map. So consider a robot arm open, so this doesn't need to be closed. And we consider all configurations of this robot arm. So this is actually torus, and we divide it by SO2. So it's again torus of one dimension less. And on this torus, we have function which is just this length between the first and the last vertices. This is our Morse function. So this torus is diffeomorphic, this variety is diffeomorphic to the torus. I'll just skip this. So we have this function given by this length, as I explained. We observe that there is an involution on this W. Involution is given by involution will be on the next slide. So here I want to mention that important role plays the collinear configurations, so such that they are all parallel or anti-parallel. So these are configurations like this, and they are, in fact, will be critical points of this function and also fixed point of an involution. And this lemma says that the critical points of this function, well, lying in... Okay, just a second. So, schematically, this can be drawn as follows. So this is my W, and this is this function FL, and this is zero. So I just want to emphasize that this function actually is minus distance square. So it is negative or zero, and it is zero. So this is zero exactly at ML. when it is closed, when linkage is closed. It's exactly at zero. So distance is zero exactly when it is closed linkage. So ML is lies exactly here, and this W is diffeomorphic to Tn minus 2, Tn minus 1. Okay. Oh, sorry. This is, so the lemma says that the critical points of this function, which are below, well, this is all critical because it's maximum. This is all critical set. So the critical points which lie below, which lie here, are all are all collinear configurations as we described above. And viewed as a critical point of this function, this collinear of configuration is Morse, and its Morse index equals n minus the number of edges in this J. Just want to mention here, we label these configurations by long subsets. So we take all subsets in one direction and all subsets in other direction, but this set in the positive direction is long. It is longer than the rest, so that this distance is positive. So these critical points are labeled by long subsets. Well, this is actually the same picture as here. Right. Well, I'm just thinking maybe I should skip something. Okay. Okay, so here we have involution. On W, we have involution, which is given by just complex conjugation. So geometrically, this means that if I have a robot arm like this, then I just reflect it. And this will be my reflected configuration. So the fixed points of this involution are all configurations which are collinear, which means that they coincide with critical points of this function. So this previous general theorems about Morse functions and involutions apply here and gives this result which I mentioned in the beginning. Okay, so this is the involution. Well, maybe I'll just skip this. Right.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
If I understand it properly, so W is a torus, which
yes.
means a closed manifold, has no boundary.
Yes.
Okay. Now, FL takes its maximal value on ML.
Yes.
And so FL is not Morse on all W, because it's
no.
degenerate.
Yes.
Off. And you cut off.
Yes, right? Exactly. We cut
off,
we
cut off this piece, and then it becomes non-degenerate.
Yes, okay? And then and it becomes this boundary. And so, but our technique works with boundary, so we apply it there. And what I skipped here, I mean, there are specific submanifold. Every critical point, there is a specific submanifold, which is also a torus, but of smaller dimension, which contains this and lies there and satisfies the conditions of the second theorem. And so this tori corresponding to each critical point, they give exact specific basis of homology of this part. But we actually want to find homology of this. But because we know that it is torus, and if you know homology of the complement, then it's, well, then it is easy too.
Is this method of calculating Betti numbers, actually even the structure of homology groups, kind of novel, or in what extent?
Well, as far as I know, it is novel, and even the theorem about involutions and Morse functions, which looks kind of classical, well, as far as I know, it's new. Well, I mean, this. Well, this.
Right. Situation. This is one piece of your work. Another is this funny, so to speak, approach in which you take some pretty standard manifold and construct a function which is nearly everywhere a Morse, except when it takes maximum.
yes.
That has very big degenerate slice. And this is precisely the topology of the slice that you want to determine in terms of everything else. It, how novel is that? I mean, I confess that I never encountered that.
Well, actually, in principle, I mean, I know that I worked on billiards. In the theory of billiards, there are specific configuration spaces, and there are also, well, similar method. You have Morse function, which is defined on complement of some set, and you study. Well, in principle, I mean, Morse functions are everywhere.
This I know, but
yes,
I didn't
encounter,
so to speak, this method of determining Betti numbers of some money.
Well, I don't know.
Which is degenerate.
I don't know. Well, what I think is novel is this observation about perfectness of involutions with Morse functions. Yes.
Interesting and very nice.
And quite easy, actually. Quite easy. And also, well, the result about Betti numbers of these varieties. So, now I want to discuss a few other questions. Okay, so first question is, these varieties, varieties of linkages, are quite specific. Well, we know the Betti numbers, and we may ask, what is the maximum complexity of these varieties? What is, for example, what is the maximal Betti number, or total Betti number, of such varieties ML? For example, in case if when n equals 4, you remember we had very few possibilities, and the most complicated was something like that. Well, and if this actually is the most the highest total Betti number appears in this case, and one asks what is the maximum of the total Betti number of these varieties, and the answer is given by the theorem. Again, a joint theorem with Dirk Schütz. It says that the maximum of the total Betti number equals this, and it is achieved in the case of equilateral linkage, so when all sides of are equal to each other. Okay. So this number is actually very close to be just 2 to the n, 2 to the n minus 1 with this factor. This is asymptotic formula. And if we look at this example, which is suspension of the triangle, so the two tori, then here the sum of the Betti numbers is 2 to the power n minus 2, which is, nearly half of this amount. Well, you will see why I am comparing these two examples. I mean, one, I want to compare, and I will compare, and actually the most, challenging things are now, I mean, the things which could be related to non-commutative geometry. okay, so... So in practice, as we know, I mean, if I look at, let's say, long molecule, and I don't know exactly what I know that it is a chain. I don't know exactly the number n even, but I know, well, it is a chain. I can have some a priori information about distribution of lengths in this chain. So I may ask statistical questions about these varieties. Suppose I have some, just a second, where is the razor? Okay, so suppose I have, Rn is a set where my length vector lies in Rn, so L is L1, Ln. Well, and here I have some domain, omega, and I know that my L is distributed in some set, omega, and it has some statistical distribution there. So then I want to study the average Betti numbers, So I will take for each of these points and L, I have Betti number of this variety. So in fact, I've used this variety as a random manifold depending on this parameter L. And its Betti numbers are also random variables. So I want to study what is the average of these Betti numbers. So actually, I will look at this in two specific situations. Yeah, this may have applications in molecular biology. So this is a joint work with Thomas Kappler. So I will look at two special cases. So the case one is when I take omega to be this unit simplex, this omega equals delta n minus 1, unit simplex with the Lebesgue measure, so mu is the Lebesgue measure. And case 2, I take unit cube. Omega is unit cube, with the Lebesgue measure. So actually, a surprising thing that asymptotically the answers are equal. So the answer is the following, that for any p, there are constants c and a and some gamma, such that the difference between this average Betti number corresponding, well, to either of these problems, a or b, minus this binomial coefficient is asymptotically small. For large n, it is asymptotically small. So this answer says that for large n, Betti numbers are, well, are this binomial coefficients. Actually, this binomial, so here I want to emphasize, p is fixed and n is large. And this binomial coefficients are exactly the Betti numbers corresponding to equilateral linkage. This BPM 1111 equals exactly, well, n times equals exactly n minus 1 p. So this, I mean, this looks a bit strange and surprising. On one hand, if you compare this theorem and the previous theorem, which says that the total Betti number has maximum achieved by equilateral linkage, and average Betti number is exactly the same as for equilateral linkage. one possible explanation for this is the following, which is just a guess. Still have time.
The fluctuation is small. The standard situation when you have the average is more or less the same as the worst problems.
Is there a general principle under which this can be seen immediately that the answer will be asymptotic answer for large n? I mean, for specific n, the answers are different and they are not integers. But this is an average number, this is an integer. Well, the difference is not a zero, it's asymptotically small, I mean, exponentially small. Yeah, well, is there a general principle of statistics or probability theory which would tell are said.
Present knowledge pragmatism is applicable here.
Yes.
Here, of course, the situation is completely different than the situations that we know. But this is more the situation that this more or less the central limit theorem. Let's see.
Yeah. Well.
This is.
Yes. Can I just?
What I'm saying is, it's not. This is simply. This is not very surprising, but definitely it is. You cannot apply this theory to prove this.
Yeah. I mean, there should be a relationship like that. But so I want to just. No, but I mean, there is another point here, which it also is surprising, that the maximum and the average are achieved on the same linkage. The maximum is achieved on the equilateral linkage, and average is also has Betti numbers of the equilateral linkage. It's also surprising. It's a second surprising point.
This is, again, the situation that I'm talking about.
Not very surprising.
But anyway.
So what I mean thought may be the case. It is just my guess. Well, we have this simplex of all length vectors, so we can always assume that the sum equals one by normalizing. It's not a problem at all. So we look at the simplex, and for each point we have this variety ML. And now there are these walls. The walls are given by linear functions, linear functionals given by equations like that, where epsilon I equals plus or minus 1. So this they cut this simplex into domains, which are called chambers. And inside each chamber, topological type of this variety is constant, is the same. They are diffeomorphic inside. When L varies inside chamber, topological type doesn't change. But of course, when you cross chamber, it does change. So I think that a possibility, which may be true in this case and which may explain this kind of thing, is that this chamber corresponding to equilateral linkage has volume, well, which is asymptotically 1. I mean, for large n, the volume of this chamber, which contains the equilateral linkage, may be close to 1, and then, well, this would follow. But I don't know if it's true. Well, I think I'll finish. Thank you.